Sawbones is a show about medical history, and nothing the hosts say should be taken as medical advice or opinion. It's for fun. Can't you just have fun for an hour and not try to diagnose your mystery boil? We think you've earned it. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy a moment of distraction from that weird growth. You're worth it.
All right. Song is about some books. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Hey everybody, welcome to Sawbones, Marital Tour of Misguided Medicine. I'm your co-host, Justin McElroy.
And I'm Sydney McElroy.
And we're going to get into the show real quick. I mean, now, this is the show. But I did want to let you know, Maximum Fun HQ, it is Max Fun Drive Time. And that means that our podcast network that we're a part of is really more of a family. Every year we come to you and say, hey, we don't have a big corporation helping us make stuff. And if you can look at the media landscape and see that's increasingly rare. And we're only able to do it because you all support us. So if you want to keep stuff like Sawbones coming, if you enjoy Sawbones, if you think we're doing good work and you get something out of it and you want it to keep happening, go to MaximumFun.org/join. You can pledge us $5 a month and get tons of bonus content. We've got other gifts we'll tell you about later. But if you can right now, please go to MaximumFun.org/join. The money you pledge, the majority of it goes directly to the shows that you listen to, like Sawbones. So if you could do that right this second while you're thinking about it and before the show proper starts, we would sure appreciate it. Right, Sid?
Absolutely. It means so much to us, all of you who are already members. Thank you. And if you're in a position to join this year, thank you. We appreciate you.
Yes, it's really important, I think, now more than ever, to support medical media in the world. And that's why we're doing our part here to support the other medical media, because I think the more media about medical, the better, Sydney. Personally.
I mean, I think so, but I would. I'm a doctor.
This week for the Max Fun Drive, we wanted to have some Max. It's been kind of men fun lately on Sawbones, I feel like. So we wanted to have, it's been a tough few months, right? So let's,
yeah.
We thought it might be good for the drive to just get a little bit more relaxed.
Well, I mean, so there's a lot of heaviness. We're trying to have fun here. We're celebrating our network and our shows and our creators and our listeners. We're celebrating you too. We're all celebrating
an independent source of accurate information that we are so happy to be.
And it's like a party. Here's something I know. When you go to a party and people start talking about I don't know, their jobs or life or work, I have found that if I start saying, yeah, let me tell you about some medical stuff that happened at my job today, or like, let me discuss the measles outbreak with you. It's a bummer at a party. Mm-hmm. It's important in other venues, right? It's vital and important. But at a party, people walk away from me.
So let's pretend, Sydney, here at the Max Fun Drive party, we're all having some nice, polite conversation. Someone says, well, Sydney, did you do anything normal this week? What would you say?
I would say, I watched The Pit.
Oh, that's good. That's a normal show. Everybody can watch that, not just doctors.
It's a TV show. It's not real. It's dramatized ER stuff. It's not ER. That's another show.
Are you sure you're not a professional TV critic? Because I'm spellbound over here.
It's a show. I won't bum you out talking about The Pit because it's all pretend,
right?
And you can watch it and you can engage with drama and experience catharsis, and then it ends after about an hour ish and then you're back to your normal life.
Yes, we're gonna be talking about The Pit.
So I was very excited to watch the show The Pit.
A brief, first, a brief history of Sawbones and medical TV. We've talked about almost like a lot of medical TV shows here on Sawbones because we got our, if you haven't been listening, this is also kind of a callback to our initial podcast, The Satellite Dish.
It is.
Where we talked about a lot of TV and medical TV. And we've done many medical TV episodes. on Sawbones, I'm always interested to hear how pop culture is like. I tried to stand up for popular culture and narrative and the importance of narrative to Sydney, and she stands up for the rigors of accuracy.
I like that. Well, the accuracy, but I also like to see, I think that watching these medical shows gives me sort of insight into how society and culture views what I do. Mm-hmm. And now I'm not an ER doctor, so I know this is a specific subset of medicine. But I think it's interesting to see the perception of healthcare mm-hmm. providers mm-hmm. throughout TV history. Because I think, and I'm going to talk about The Pitt, but just to kind of briefly illustrate my point, mm-hmm. I think if we look back to like my favorite TV show of all time, MASH, mm-hmm. the doctors and nurses on MASH are portrayed as heroes. And I mean, obviously there's the military angle too, but like they are heroic humanitarian figures mm-hmm. who are the last line of defense between you and death. And
yes, correct.
And they're most of the time their actions are pretty much beyond reproach. Now, I mean, there's moments, but most of the time that's how they're portrayed. And I think that you have a lot of...
The drama is typically from human elements rather than, and how will it shake out rather than was the doctor fallible?
Yes. And I think that we entered, like, we had some fun medical shows we've talked about on here before, like Scrubs, which was more about the foibles of medicine. Doctors are humans. Sometimes they're goofy. Sometimes yeah. they're selfish. Sometimes they're sarcastic. Like, whatever. Not necessarily negative. But then we talked about the show The Resident, which very much, not necessarily the titular resident character.
Yeah, he was the one heroic, good doctor.
But it very much portrayed not just the healthcare system, but specifically doctors as part of the corruption, part of the problem. Mm-hmm. Not all the physicians on the show, but that, and that was what really pushed me away from it, is that I didn't feel that that was a fair representation of us either.
How surprising.
I know. The system is bad. There are good and bad people in bad systems. There mm-hmm. are good and bad people in good systems, by yeah. the way.
Are you ready to talk about The Pitt?
So I'm going
to
talk about The Pitt.
So wait, before you talk about The Pitt, because it's Max Fun Drive, could you tell me about The Pitt in a way where we have a little bit of fun? So you know that I've been in several rooms, not a lot, where I've had to pitch TV shows to people, right? So I was thinking maybe as a way of explaining The Pitt to me, I could be like a TV executive mm-hmm. and you could pitch The Pitt to me like it's your idea that you just came up with, right? So it's a cold room. It's so stressful. You walk in. I'm the exec from HBO Max 2. Mm-hmm. It's the second. We're bringing back HBO Max with a sequel, right?
Right.
And we haven't told Max about it yet. So Max is going to be so mad when they hear HBO Max 2 is the new kid on the block. And we're trying to get a slate of programming. So that's our spiel where we're at with HBO Max 2. Tell me about The Pitt, because I saw this on my schedule today and I was so excited to have you come in to the office today.
Okay. Can I have a whiteboard?
Yeah. Put the whiteboard up. Yeah. We've got, okay. If you look at the marker's right behind you.
Okay.
The whiteboard's 8 feet long. I don't know how you missed it.
I'm going to, okay. First of all, can I ask you, do you remember the television show ER?
Yes.
A wildly popular, groundbreaking television
I've been
show
in Hollywood for 30 years. That's why they call me Paul Hollywood.
Okay. So I'm just going to write two letters up on the whiteboard.
Okay. You're writing E. Okay. Now you're writing an R. That's a big R.
Yeah. ER. Okay. Now.
This is really good.
I'm going in front of ER.
Okay.
Like before that.
Okay.
It's a word before it now.
Okay.
And here it is. Now, do you see what I've written here?
I can't. As big as the whiteboard is, I can't make it out. Could you read it to me?
I wrote your more.
What?
I wrote more.
More.
More ER. Do you remember how ER ended and everybody said, no, we loved that. Could we have more? Well.
That's more ER. Can I tell you something?
That pitch would work.
This is, do you know the...
You can tell the reference.
No,
story.
I'm not going to tell.
That's why I was opening the door for you to tell the reference
story.
I was opening the door for that. This was the reference.
When James Cameron went in to pitch a sequel to Alien, he went in. I heard this on Blank Check. He went in to a big whiteboard and he wrote the word alien, right? And then he wrote an S at the end of it. And then he put two lines through it and turned it into a dollar sign and then walked out. Room. It's the best pitch.
That this was. I was. Thank you. This was my.
Sydney knows
that was
for
you.
Story. So it was a gift.
That was a gift to you. So I don't want to be reductive. I think this is a really great show. I have not finished the season, so I won't be spoiling all the arcs of the season. It has some things about it that make it different than ER. The formatting is different. But I think
that is not what we were pitched. But Excuse me. We're going to have to spoil the vibe is ER.
Okay. The vibe is, and if you enjoyed ER, I think you would enjoy the show. And then, of course, the main character, Dr. Robbie, is played by Noah Wyle, who is the chief of this emergency room of the ER in the show. And while he is not a grown-up Dr. Carter, it is not hard, if you are a big fan of ER, to watch and think, so this is where Carter ended up. Right. It's not a stretch.
Yeah, but it's like, I think, headcanon, right? Like, yes absolutely.
Yeah. No, it's not part of the show. That is not the fiction of the show. He is a different guy named Dr. Robbie. He's a totally different guy. But you can imagine that if you want. If you're like me and you want to, you can. So it is called The Pit. I thought they were calling the ER The Pit. Like, that's where they are. They're practicing in The Pit.
I figured it's about Pittsburgh.
Well, yes, it is.
Okay.
I didn't figure that out to the first. I started the first episode and they were like, welcome to The Pit. And now, I was like, nobody calls their ER. I mean, I don't want to say nobody. Somebody might somewhere.
It is P-I-T-T.
Well, I didn't know. The logo. No, but it's because they're at a Pittsburgh hospital that is, you know, colloquially known as The Pit. You went to The Pit.
Is this a real hospital, Neo?
Well, honey, I don't know.
Well, allow me to look it up while you talk about the show. I'll look up into that stuff.
Yeah. I don't know if it's a real hospital.
It's a fictional Pittsburgh Trauma Medical Hospital.
There you go.
Good news for you, Sid. It's already been renewed for a second season.
Oh, thank goodness. So here, a couple things that are special about it, just in the formatting of the show. I didn't realize this until I turned it on. It's in real time. So, like, episode number one starts at 7 a.m. and it runs through 8 a.m. It is the first literal hour of Dr. Robbie's shift in the ER that day. And it is the first, and it is an hour long. I mean, like, it mimics at what an hour in the ER feels like in an hour. Mm-hmm. And I think that is such a cool idea. Then obviously ER didn't do that, right? An ER episode could span days, you know. But to see the number of things, like that's always kind of, I think, been the draw of medical shows, is to see the intensity, the moments when people have to do, I think they do heroic things on the show. I know that sounds conceited because I am a physician, but I think working in healthcare, occasionally people do just casually do heroic things and then go about their day and it's no big deal. And there are other professions where that's true, but this is the one I know. And I think that in other shows, they show that, but because, I don't know, it's all, you have no sense of like, well, how did they save those lives over the course of a year or a day or whatever? In this, they show you what an hour is like in a busy ER.
And that's interesting. There have been other shows that have tried to do the real-time thing. Obviously, the most notable is 24, which was 24 hours of a day. Each 44-minute episode of the show was an hour. So you could imagine there's always 16 minutes of time on ER where it's like not much happens, right? But
they were in the bathroom or something. That's part of the action.
A lot of shows can't keep it up. There's some that do like individual episodes. I wanted to go for a list because I thought there might be some I was forgetting. They mentioned a MASH episode here called Lifetime that is in real time. I guess there was a Grey's Anatomy episode that was the same way. Movies too. What is the Nick of Time? There's a Johnny Depp movie where he's trying to like rescue his kidnapped daughter in a mall. It's 90 minutes in the night. But I always wonder with shows like that, like, does it feel, because you have to maintain, and they don't have commercial breaks on this show, right? So it's like you have to maintain a level of action that, does it feel artificial, I guess, that they're trying to do this in real time? Is it realistic that things would be this like compact? Does it feel like real?
So I'm not an ER doctor, but I've spent a lot of time. I've done a ton of hospital medicine in my career as leading an inpatient service. And so I have spent a lot of time in busy ERs. And obviously in residency, you spend a lot of time in a busy ER. Not as busy as this ER. We are not as big a city. We would, on our worst days, I think we may reach what they demonstrate in the show, maybe. But still, it's not typically that busy. I would say that it is pretty accurate. They are cherry picking a little. I mean, obviously it's a TV show, so
sure,
they're allowed to.
Right.
But if it were a real ER and you were really walking, like if you're following just one doctor through their shift in an ER, mm-hmm. you would have a lot of stuff that probably wouldn't make very good television interspersed in the things that they demonstrate. So, like, you would have these very gory traumas where you have to act very quickly and stop bleeding and be creative to, you know, save somebody's life and restart people's hearts. And although we don't really do that very often. And all
you
of
always
that.
Always have to mention that, Sydney. We know you don't bring back people back to life that often.
I mean, I don't. Again, this is why I shouldn't be at parties. But there's that stuff. But then there's like a lot of ER visits that I'm sure we have all been maybe the patient or know somebody who has like a visit that because you couldn't access healthcare in another way, you didn't know what else to do. So you went to the ER. So you went to the ER because you ran out of your blood pressure medication and you couldn't get a hold of your doctor, or you don't have a doctor, or your insurance ran out, or you moved to a new place and you ended up going to an ER because you were scared. What happens if my blood pressure gets high and I'm not really sick, but I don't know what to do? There are a lot of things like that because our healthcare system is so broken that they don't show on the pit. And I mean, I understand why. I don't know. I mean,
how do you make that how do you make that interesting or compelling?
It's boring. And it also, I think that it, I mean, I think, and I, maybe they'll discuss it at some point. Maybe that will be part of it. This shouldn't have been an ER visit. This is the kind of thing that we should, and it's, but the problem is you don't want to blame the patient for that. Because the reason people come to the ER for stuff that isn't ER stuff is because they got no other option.
Right.
Right.
We do have, because what is it you always say? We do have single payer healthcare and we just have the least efficient system.
Yeah, we have universal healthcare in this country because of EMTALA. We cannot turn you away from the ER, but it is the most expensive, least efficient, and the least effective for your health. Because the ER is, their job is to find the true emergencies and get them in the hospital to fix them. And then triage out people who can go see another doctor the next day. Their job is not to provide for your chronic care. And so you're never really getting the chronic care that you need in an ER. Mm-hmm. But anyway, back to the pit. I don't want to, I promise I wouldn't be a bummer.
Yeah.
I do think it's fairly reflective of if you were to just condense the most dramatic things that are happening in a busy big city ER at any given time, you would get an episode of the pit, especially since they follow multiple doctors. I think that makes it a little more fair. If it was one doctor whose entire ER shift was just nonstop drama, that would be unrealistic.
How do they handle that in the show, Sid? Because I feel like ER was so defined by, well, I say ER, but really all these medical shows, right? It's always about a team. Like, it's always about, except for House, which was, obviously, he had a team, but it was about House.
Team too, right.
But it was about House, right? How do they make it seem like he's not just, like, the, how do they balance that? Because I feel like we have moved away from, like, saintly hero doctor as a template, you know what I mean? So, like, how do they make it seem like it's not just the Noah Wiley show?
Well, okay, it is a little it is, and not in a bad way. So, it, we start with his shift. I think that's a really powerful way to move into, and in all honesty, you know, that was the first episode of ER. It was actually Mark Green's shift. Mm. You were following his whole, now it wasn't in real time, but that was the opening. You wake up with him in the call room. So you're following Noah Wiley's shift. And so I do think that kind of immediately puts you in his perspective.
Sure.
And there's a through line. So there's all the other doctors, but it's important that we're following Dr. Robbie on this day. And you find this out immediately, so I don't really think this is a spoiler. He is working on a day of the year that he traditionally takes off. It is unusual that Dr. Robbie would be working on this day because it is the anniversary of the death of his mentor and predecessor as chief of the ER, who died of COVID during the height of the pandemic 5 years ago.
Oh.
And so he's working a shift that is specifically very hard and traumatizing for him to be at. And we don't know all that, like the details of that are slowly unveiled through the, you know, so far through what I've watched. And I assume we'll find there is some level on which you can tell he blames himself and we don't really know why.
Mm-hmm.
But throughout the episodes, while we're slowly getting insight into each of these other doctors, we're getting a lot more insight into Dr. Robbie. I would say that, I mean, his segments, if you went minute to minute, I'm sure we'd get more screen time with him than anybody else. And then the other thing is he has flashbacks. He's standing in an ER room taking care of a patient in the present, and then he'll have a momentary flashback where he's in the same room and he's wearing his PAPR, the big the big space hood looking thing that everybody wore during COVID. And he's surrounded by patients, you know, just packed in every room, 3 and 4 people all on ventilators, pictures of their loved ones taped to the machines. The thing, the COVID thing. I get choked up when I think about it too much. I'm sorry. But he's surrounded by COVID again. And nobody else quite gets that kind of insight. So it is a little bit the Noah Wiley show. But they pull away from that very quickly. It's kind of cool. The way they do it is like you'll have one character who you've been following their narrative, and then they stop to talk to somebody, and another character just sort of enters the scene and the camera follows them to the next thing.
Yeah, it's a great technique.
And that's the way that they guide you to the next character story.
They are going to do, I'm looking at this, it looks like 15 hours for this first season. So, Sydney, do you think it's a missed opportunity that it's not like 35 hours? So, like, shouldn't it fall an intern that you get to hour 30 and they're not even, like, making sense anymore? Like, that, like you can't even follow storylines. Like, there's a whole episode where they're just trying to nap and no one will let them.
Well, can I say that would be, I think that would be a real great idea for a next season. I mean,
it just picks up. Like, he's like, well, this has been one crazy day. It's like, it's just getting started. We got another 15 hours to go, Robbie.
Well, I mean, that I do think that that would, I mean, that might terrify. This might become a horror movie if you had to watch, if you had to be in the mind of a resident who's been on call for 36 hours and has been awake that long. And I don't know if, I don't know how you would reflect the amount of caffeine that is generally coursing through your system and what that does to your brain at hour 36.
Sid, I want to talk more about The Pit, but first I did want to remind everybody that it's Max Fun Drive time. And that means that if you can say, hey, I love this stuff, I want it to keep happening, I'm going to pledge, let's say you can save $5 a month to make this happen. You go to MaximumFun.org/join. You're going to get so much bonus content that you won't even believe it. If you're already a donor, by the way, and you haven't checked out some of this stuff, go to MaximumFun.org/howtoboco. And you can find all the information. We've got this year a Sawbones Nights Medical Mystery is our bonus episode. Sydney and I played a NYC emergency room board game, and it was a lot of fun. And you get to meet Nurse, what was her name? Nurse Tammy? Was our Nurse Judy. Nurse Judy and all the great characters there. And there's a lot more. There's like, 11, 12 hours of Sawbones stuff. Just Sawbones. The main thing is you're helping us to make the shows possible. What that means is that if you pledge $5 a month to Maximum Fun, the majority of that is going to go to the shows that you choose to say that you listen to. You listen to Sawbones or whatever shows. And the majority of your donation goes to them. That helps with hosting. It's equipment fees. It lets us pay editors. It lets us do this as a job, which we wouldn't be able to otherwise.
Yeah, we can't say that enough, that your contributions, your donations through the years, you being a member and believing in what we do and being willing to toss some money our way has helped us to improve the quality of our show. I can research more. I can access more journals. I'm subscribed to so many journals now. And I can buy articles when they're behind a paywall. And I can spend more time doing that away from my other jobs so that I can make this show better.
And kidding aside, folks, what started as like a pretty kind of a silly medical podcast, it makes me really thankful and proud that we have a source of information right now that I know is accurate and reliable, and that we can be that for people, and that we can provide that when other people don't seem to be that interested in providing that kind of truth and insight. And it's just your donations that make us able to do that.
Yeah, you're part of that.
Yeah, I mean, you're a big part of that. Yeah, you are the reason it happens.
Exactly. So.
MaximumFun.org/join is the address. If you can do it right now while you're thinking about it, let's say you can do $10 a month, that's amazing. That would be cool because you're going to get a pin. Have you seen our pin, Sid?
I have, Justin.
You know what it says on there? It says, kill all the mosquitoes, which is not a very Sawbones vibe, you know, like advocating violence. But we thought, let's mix it up, right? Who can we turn our anger against? And it's mosquitoes, folks. We've done the work. We went to entomologists. Guys, we took this bold theory to a room full of entomologists and said, where are you guys at with killing all the mosquitoes? And these entomologists were like, probably should kill all the mosquitoes.
Right. And their job is to like defend all the bugs, I think.
Yes.
I think that's their job is like to protect bugs.
Yeah.
But they don't want to protect mosquitoes.
So let's kill all the mosquitoes for just $10 a month. You're going to get an enamel pen. You can get it from any show, but that's the best one. And we have other pledge gifts at MaximumFun.org/join. But really, it's just about supporting the media you like. And it's about supporting stuff you like. And if you could do that for us, it would really mean a lot. We only do this once a year. And if you don't go support the shows, then we can't make them. So please.
Thank you.
Sid, the most interesting thing to me with medical shows, because you and I watch them together, so I get to experience this in real time. How do they handle jargon? Where is jargon at? Because I think jargon is so interesting with these shows, because you have some where like, okay, Scrubs handles it by only using jargon when they want to communicate that a character is confused, right?
Right.
Or that they're being smart. So if a character has an answer in Scrubs, it's jargon, right?
Right.
And sometimes House will use jargon to show why he's smarter than the other people in the room. They don't want the audience to guess what he's thinking. So House can use medical terminology. He uses jargon like that because he wants the audience to be lost, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how does the pit handle that? Because I think that when you bring jargon into it, you are adding realism, but you're also risking, I think, losing the audience or them not being able to follow the story.
I think that is why you see so many shows that are set in teaching hospitals.
Oh, interesting.
I think that's
Speak
how you...
on that.
So if you... The way that the pit is structured, and this is similar to Grey's Anatomy, you have... In the show, you've got Noah Wiley, who's the chief... He's the attending in the ER. So he's done with all his training. He runs the ER. He could just use jargon the whole show if it was just him, because he knows what he's talking about.
Right.
But underneath him, you now have senior residents, junior residents, so in various years of residency, interns, first, second, third, fourth years. And you've also got medical students. You have, and they introduce themselves. I thought it was interesting. I mean, I guess most people could figure it out. They like introduce themselves and they're like, so-and-so MS4, so-and-so MS3. I'm assuming most people know that means they're a med student in their third year and fourth year.
I think context clues, right?
Med student four, med school, you know.
Yeah.
That's what they're. Anyway, so you have all levels of learners in the ER.
Oh, yeah.
And so that helps. And then you also have doctors explaining things to patients. And specifically, they actually have one character who gets criticized a lot. Anyway, Dr. Mohan, she gets criticized a lot because she spends too much time with her patients.
Mm.
And part of that is her explaining things to patients in ways they will understand.
Mm.
So I think when you have characters like that, it also helps. They have a social worker whose job is to explain things to characters in ways that the doctors didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And then I really think that's part of the draw of teaching medicine in these shows, is that then there's a reason for two doctors to be standing at a bedside, like, and make a decision, leave the room, and for one doctor to look at the other and say, did you understand why we did that, this, and this. That's real.
Yeah.
That's all real. We do that. And with med students, especially like when you're in your third year, I don't know that they know all the terminology yet, and they probably don't. And so there are times where I might use some jargon, and then I might quickly like define the jargon as soon as I say it, so I don't put them on the spot. And then also to reinforce they're learning a new language, and I want to reinforce this new language as they start to feel comfortable using it.
Do you feel like the glut of medical shows throughout TV have, or especially recently, do you think they've increased the like literacy of, as these shows become more realistic, do you think that people are more literate, like medically literate when it comes to TV shows? Not like the actual system, but like they can handle a bit more as we move forward, right? It can be a little bit more realistic and jargony because we've been hearing a lot of this jargon for 30 years.
Yes, I definitely think there are probably terms that I can use, the medical terminology or abbreviations that I could just toss out. Do you know what an MI is?
Myocardial infarction.
Myocardial infarction. Or colloquially.
You want me to know the colloquial name for a myocardial infarction?
I think a lot of people, when they hear MI,
If you could take, it would be so personally meaningful to me if you would take like a half second. If you would just take a half second. It would be so personally meaningful to me.
It was impressive that you knew what MI stood for. That was very impressive.
you know, Wayne, if you're not careful, you're going to lose me.
Yes, that was very impressive. I just meant, I do think that there are some terms that have seeped into the lexicon. I mean, I think most people know immediately when we say EKG that we're worried about your heart. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, I mean, so I do think that like some things have because of these medical shows. I think that there's still a lot that you can learn from them about the system. I mean, I would not say that these medical shows are a great place to learn about medicine. Certainly, okay, yeah. I will say a lot of it on this show is pretty accurate. Mm. What they're demonstrating looks pretty much like things look, and people survive things that they generally could survive, and we see the consequences when it is something that we can't fix or save. And I think they're really honest about that. They tackle some things that I think they're not medical concepts, but I do think are important for people to talk about. There's an elderly person who has advanced directives that say don't intubate him, but his adult children show up and are demanding that he be intubated. And so we see that drama play out. Mm. And that I think is like a real, I mean, I can tell you that happens. It is not uncommon. I've been the doctor in that situation many times in my career. And it is as heart-wrenching as it seems on the show every single time to try to figure out what is the right thing ethically, legally, medically. How do I make the people in the room feel okay with the decision that we're all about to make? It is so difficult on the show, and that echoes real life. So I think there are moments like that that are instructive. They also talk a lot, and I think this is maybe what they wanted to do with this show. In ER, they talk about, like, in the original ER, they talk about HMOs, and they talk about, like, underfunding in medicine and shutting mm-hmm. down ERs. They talk about some of that stuff. But it's always sort of, like, secondary to the relationship drama and, like, the personal drama, you know? Mm-hmm. And, like, there's some, like, people are doing it and stuff like that.
Whoa, are you telling me that love can bloom even in the ER?
Even in the ER.
So can I take a guess? Is it... I'm seeing Dr. Cassie McKay, a 42-year-old second-year resident. That makes her a non-traditional
yes.
student. Is that the love interest for Dr. Robbie?
Not that they have indicated in any way.
It's no. your show, Sid. You got to tell me, are you going to get these two together honey. Or not, honey? I'm trying to sell this to HBO Max 3. Honey, by the way, HBO Max 2 got canceled. I'm so sorry. It's Max 3 now. And I need love. I need romance. I need sex. I got to sell. Sex sells. What do you got?
Honey, for all I know, he's married to somebody. They don't talk. I mean, they get a little bit into their personal lives at times. But like Dr. McKay has an ankle bracelet. And I don't know why.
That's wild. That's a big swing.
Yeah. And so like, I mean like an electronic monitoring thing, just in case that wasn't clear. I don't just mean she has a bracelet on her ankle. Yeah. And like, we don't know why. So there's all kinds of things we don't know about these.
Man, if I was a TV writer, can I just say, as somebody who has had to script things on the fly before a lot, That's great. What a great idea. Do that in your D&D campaign, folks. Put an ankle bracelet on, put an ankle monitor on some character. You don't have to know. They may not know.
No.
But here in a few years, they'll be like, oh yeah, this old thing, wanted.
And then they
I'm
can
wanted
play out.
Felon.
So, I mean, I think they very much want to, they're separating some of that personal life drama to really focus on the trauma that their career has inflicted upon these characters. Yeah. I mean, I really think that's the point, because we get a little insight into how medicine has impacted them and less into how whatever's going on in their personal lives. Mm-hmm. So I don't think we're going to have that kind of like that sort of thing. The drama we're getting is, and I do think, man, I think this is going to mark every medical show. We've talked about it on Dr. Odyssey. It's COVID is part of Dr. Odyssey, if you can believe it. I think these post-COVID medical shows, and when I say post-COVID, COVID isn't over, by the way.
It's a shorthand for the
world in COVID.
I mean, is it accurate to say the pandemic is not, it's no longer an active pandemic, right?
Right, right. Okay. We are moving into which we knew would happen scientifically. We are slowly moving into the phase where it is becoming endemic in multiple countries, which will mean it will be hopefully less fatal overall, but it is still a serious illness. I diagnosed cases of it this week. There is an active outbreak ongoing in our community and in many communities right now. COVID is still a thing.
But there was a time period.
Like, there was a time period right. where it was obviously it was different. It was a different thing. It's still a thing. It's just it's changed as to how we think about it. When I say post-COVID, I mean in the world where COVID exists.
Yes.
In this space, I think we're going to see a return to healthcare providers being a little more the heroes. I think there's more sympathy. They treat these characters with a lot more care, with a lot a gentler lens. I think that there's more understanding for what they're going through. I think we see that in the show. We see them stand in a room and deliver heart-wrenching news, or there's a kid who maybe is going to do a school shooting, and then he runs out of the ER and nobody knows where he went. And then everybody has to go on with their day, knowing that that kid is out there maybe going to do something horrific, and then they have to go on with their day because that's their job. And so I think they do a really good job of humanizing doctors again, and nurses, all of healthcare professionals. I think most people like nurses. I think it's us doctors that need more humanizing because, I think to say that like nurses are angels and heroes is not like a revolutionary statement. I think people have felt that way for a long time. To say that doctors are heroes, I think it's controversial now. A lot of people hate us. A lot of people think we're part of the problem. And some of us are. I'm not saying we're all great. But I don't think most of us are part of the problem. Mm. But anyway, I think we're going to see that. And I think we're going to see the trauma of living through and working through the pandemic, surviving the pandemic. I think there's a lot of survivor guilt among the medical community because we lost some of our colleagues. And I think we're going to see that playing out in these shows. And I'm glad that we're talking about it because it's part of the great, what did they call it? The great people are it's quitting. It's the great quitting is what I'm going to call it.
Great
people
quitting.
Are quitting medicine. People are leaving the medical profession because they're traumatized. They're worn out. A lot of people don't like us very much, and the system is so impossible to work in and do a good job anymore. Mm-hmm. It feels hopeless. Mm-hmm. And so I think that it's going to talk about that. There's a lot. The administrator comes down and is like, you're keeping people in the ER too long. You need to move them through faster. And they're like, well, we can't because there are no beds upstairs. Well, the truth is there are beds upstairs, but they don't have nurses to staff them because the hospital doesn't want to pay nurses a living wage. So they can't attract any nurses to staff these beds. So they shut down whole units. And then people sit in the ER for days and days.
Yeah.
This is all true. This is all true about the system that you are interacting with.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that knowing that and absorbing that and then demanding something else is a really good thing mm-hmm. that this medical drama could do.
Now, Sydney, before we wrap up here, I did want to say, and I know that Sawbones, we haven't talked about NetSuite yet, and I know Sawbones can't be just about medical TV, but shark attacks are a huge problem, and Dr. Odyssey has the guts to turn that into a two-part event. Honey, it's shark attack and then shark attack part two, Orca. And I'm just saying, if you could consider that for next week, Dr. Odyssey shark attack, a very important two-parter, which just like the pit, highlighting important issues. Shark attacks in this case, and apparently orcas.
Honey, nothing would make me happier than to talk about Dr. Odyssey next week.
Well, nothing would make me happier than if people supported our show in the Max Fund Drive. MaximumFund.org/join is the address. Again, $5 a month, $10 a month. I'm so happy that we get to make this show for you, and I'm so grateful that your support has made that possible. It may seem like something that somebody else is going to do, but I hope that, like, you realize that it is an individual thing. It is a bunch of people individually making the decision that I want this to happen. I'm going to support it, and I can make a difference. And I know it may not seem like a big deal, but it really does add up, and it's allowed us to do the show for a decade and to pull a lot of good stuff out. And I really appreciate the opportunity to do that.
Yeah, thank you so much. If you are a member already, thank you. If you're going to donate or upgrade or boost this year, thank you, thank you. Share the show, tell your friends. If you just listen to our show, thank you.
Thank you. And listen, if you can't donate, if you can upgrade a little bit or boost, you can even just a couple more bucks a month would be so hugely helpful. And if that's not a possibility, just share it around. Let people know that it's Max Fun Drive time. I really appreciate it. That's going to do it for us for this episode. Oh, thanks to the taxpayers for the use of their song Medicines as the intro and outro program. And thanks to you for listening. That's going to do it for us. Until next time, my name is Justin McElroy.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And as always, don't drill a hole in your head.
Maximum Fun.
A worker-owned network
of artist-owned shows.
Supported directly by you.